John Decker, own White House correspondent, is the only one of the only members of the bar, and also I think registered, you know, with the Supreme Court as an attorney. But White House correspondent John, good morning. I noticed yesterday, at the height of Yale and Columbia having to shut down basically classes for the day because of this anti-Semitic or anti-Israel protest, I noticed on one network that begins with C and ends with N, it's about the fifth story yesterday. The first four are all Trump hush money, Trump trial, Trump trial. Do you think, yeah. I don't know if that network could exist without Trump in the news, and I'm being half serious.
No, well, I think that I get it. I get why you're saying that. Now, they're all in, you know, in terms of this coverage of Donald Trump, this particular criminal trial in New York City, and all of the travails of Donald Trump that he's going through on the criminal justice front this coming year. But look, that is what they've invested in. That's what they think drives their ratings, and that's why they cover the news the way they do.
John, what is your take, the latest? How long is this going to last? I don't know what the net impact, good or bad, on Trump is politically, liability speaking, financial. There's probably going to be something. I doubt there's jail time. But where does this go? As an attorney, what are you seeing?
I don't think that this is going to impact the presidential race as things stand right now. But, you know, keep in mind, the trial just got underway yesterday, you know, and we're going to hear more from that first witness, David Pecker, on the witness stand starting at 11 a.m. today. But I think that to a certain extent, this has already been baked into the cake, you know, the way people view Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. So regardless of what happens in this particular criminal trial, I don't think it changes the trajectory of the race for Donald Trump or for Joe Biden.
Interesting. John Decker, on White House correspondent. Enjoy your Tuesday.
Have a great day. Thanks so much. I'll talk to you soon, Jack. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Well, Michael Graham, New Hampshire Journal, whether it's talking about parental rights bill, gender in sports, or even sanctuary cities, the banter in Concord is getting to be rather tabloid-esque, Michael. Good morning.
Banter? I'm talking about testimony before House committees, Jack Heath, at nhjournal.com. So you tell me, do you want to start with why sanctuary cities are bad, why boys should play sports with girls.
I want to talk about this headline. Everyone's a little bisexual, one member of the House.
Okay, so the bill says that if your parent sends a written email or letter, I want you to tell me what's going on with my child. The bill says teachers and schools cannot lie to the parent or keep secrets from them, mm-hmm. which is currently the policy at many school systems, including the Manchester school system, the biggest in the state. And the argument from the opponents of this, the people who think teachers should be able to lie, is that when it comes to sexuality, children need a safe space away from their parents with teachers and other adults, close quote, to have secret conversations about sex. Now, Jack, what could possibly go wrong with 14-year-olds having conversations with adults who aren't family members in private about sex? Can't imagine. And so State Rep. Timothy Horgan says that the concerns by parents are ridiculous and offered his own theory. Quote, in the acronym LGBTQ, Horgan said, the B stands for bisexual. And everybody is at least somewhat bisexual, the Durham Democrat said. Quote, no straight person is completely straight. No gay person is 100% gay. These issues are difficult for any young person.
Wow, and that's a modern-day Sigmund Freud.
So, Jack, you're not 100% gay. That's good to know. And so, or straight or whatever. So that's fascinating. Then on the issue of sports, the argument made by Democrats in the House, and these are all elected Democrats, is that boys and girls are not biologically different. So enough for it to matter in sports, and that if you just do enough conditioning and training, according to State Rep. Hope Damon of Sunapee, you can make the difference. So you saw the picture, Jack, of the 6-foot-tall guy with
Lynn
a beard.
And Lynn?
Yeah. The only thing that the girl who got sent to the hospital needed to do was work out more.
Yeah, why don't you refresh people about that story out of Lynn, Mass.?
Yeah, I mean, the guy was playing on a girls' team at a school that allows everyone to determine their own sex, and he injured three girls in a single game, and he rolled one of the girls by her hair, and the video was very disturbing. and people were upset. But in New Hampshire, every Democrat in the legislature, from Donna Soucy to Lou D'Alessandro down to your local state rep, voted against keeping guys out of girls' sports. And I thought the most interesting argument was from the representative Glad, New Hampshire, who said that if it's unsafe for boys to play against boys, quote, if boys are so dangerous to girls, why aren't boys too dangerous to other boys? Well, why should they be allowed to play sports at all? Why is it okay for a boy to be hit in the face with a field hockey ball and not a girl? I don't understand that distinction. So the solution is to cancel all male sports because males are just too dangerous. And State Representative
If it's white males. Hey, Michael.
State Representative Male Myler agreed.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not sure what being a biological male has to do with your gender identity.
Michael, okay. I want to pose one simple question, and it flashback to University of Vermont in a philosophy class. I took some philosophy. John Stuart Mill, utilitarian principle about the greater good. And he was a philosopher, and he talked about, you know, you can't be 100%, but you got to have some greater good. You know, 8 out of 10 people, you know, benefit. So the point I want to make is, on these stories about gender, why are women so silent and acquiescing on this when they had to fight so many years to get, and they're still not there, better placement, NCAA sports, tournaments, recognition, varsity at all levels, titles, get, you know, more women's rights moving forward? Because a lot of what this does is just take roster positions away from other young gals or lacrosse players or gals that want to maybe go to UNH Durham and get a scholarship. And I'm just curious why there's not more of an uproar from the sort of women's rights community.
First of all, Plato says John Stuart Mill is full of crap. So just let's get that on the record.
I like my professor there. It was a good class.
Well, that's good. I'm a Charles Santiago Peirce person myself. I think we're moving towards a summum bonum. But State Rep Jody Newell is a woman, and she says that the reason Keene has a Sanctuary City program is because they are not going to be forced by Fox News into pretending that there's a problem with illegal immigration.
Yeah, doesn't
and
exist.
And instead of there being a problem, she says, quote, we are being ginned up to be concerned about one or two mass murderers. And therefore, banning sanctuary cities is, quote, unnecessary and harmful. And State Rep. David Muse agreed, said the only problem this bill would solve is that too many Granite Staters watch too much Fox News. Mm-hmm. So they are opposed to banning sanctuary cities. But I just love that one or two mass murderers. You know, it's a shame that Democrats have a McCarthy-style blacklist against New Hampshire Journal, and they will not allow us to cover their events. Because my question for Representative Newell would be, so how many is too many then?
Yeah.
Three? Six? I mean, what's the mass murderer quota for New Hampshire? And by the way, she's not exaggerating. We had a guy who was was convicted of 11 murders.
Yeah,
in
working
Brazil, working in Rye.
Yeah, at a home in Rye. What about the two rapes and the most recent one in Rockland, Massachusetts?
As Governor Healey in Massachusetts said, you know, these things happen, Jack. Really, who are we? Who wants to bicker and argue about who rapes who? Jack, I got one last thing for you. If you saw a truck with a veteran's bumper sticker and a license plate that said A10 on it, what would you think?
Warthog?
If you were Ray Buckley, the chairman of the Democratic Party, what would you think?
I don't know.
He sent out a tweet attacking Kelly Ayotte's husband for his A10 license plate, assuming that it meant Kelly Ayotte ran for Senate and won in 2010. Because, you know, Buckley has never served in the military.
He was a fighter pilot. It was an anti-tank jet he flew. I met her husband.
He flew
a veteran.
In Iraq.
Yeah, he's heck of a Joseph.
He received commendations for Iraq.
Yeah, you don't want to mess with her husband in terms of his service to this country. Oh, my goodness.
But Kelly Ayotte's husband, Daly, had the line of the day. And it's at nhjournal.com. I'm proud to have fought for Ray Buckley's right to be an idiot. And there are plenty of veterans out there who watch what's going on at MIT and Columbia. They watch what's happening in the State House, and they think the same thing. Your right to be an idiot. And so thank you, Joe Daly, for your service. And thank you, Ray Buckley, for reminding us who you are.
He's a character, her husband. I met him several times. He used to be our landscaper when I lived at a home in Bedford, and he'd come in, and we'd talk about his time flying those things. Hey, listen, thank you, Michael. A lot there to think about, a lot there to ponder. What a world. Alicia Preston-Xanthopoulos, APX, Seacoast Online, an earlier start. Alicia, good Tuesday morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Well, you know the my comeback on that. You don't care.
I do. I keep telling you I care deeply. I care a little bit more how Patty's doing, but I care about you as well.
Hey, I have to say, you know, I began the morning with a quick opening line that is just part of my my perception. How crazy are things? Look at the headlines yesterday and today. Columbia, Yale University, anti-Israeli, anti-Semitic protests, basically shutting down the schools. You know, riot, police gear, arrest. And they're not just protesting pro-Palestine and the violence in Gaza. I mean, this is a tear down the American society, pro-Hamas thing. And I'm looking at this going, okay, today the Senate's going to return to Washington to vote on aid package, including Israel. And all CNN talks about for the first six stories is Donald Trump, Donald Trump, hush money trial, Donald Trump, Donald Trump, hush money trial, Donald Trump. And look at this picture going, wow, what a world we live in.
You know what amazed me about these college protests, Jack, is that they're not pro-Palestinian. They're anti-Israel and pro-Hamas.
Yeah.
And that's a very big difference. And there are some peaceful protests that are pro-Palestinian, and good people can agree or disagree as to whether Israel has gone far enough in Gaza or should go further or should go further. Good people can peaceably disagree on that. But these are chants pro-Hamas.
Yeah.
This is for the destruction of Israel. This is not the same thing as sympathy for the Palestinian people who are suffering under their Hamas regime. And it's the absolute ignorance on our Ivy League campuses dumbfounds me.
Well, you know, it's funny you used a word there that Rory O'Neill, who's a very grounded, logical, world-traveled national correspondent for NBC, said yesterday, ignorance. And, you know, Alicia, I had said that for months, even not long after October 7th, knowing the anti-Semitic stuff was there, I said, you know what really is underlying this at places like Columbia? And I want to know your take on this. It's not so much anti-Israeli. It's an anti-American sentiment on that campus with the professors, with the students. We're the problem. America's the problem. America, tear down our society. Death to Americans, some of these students are chanting. We're the problem. Not just pro-Hamas, anti-Israel. I think there's an inherent anti-Western, anti-American sentiment, especially at Columbia.
Oh, I think you're right, and I think we've discussed this before. This isn't even about the conflict in Israel and Gaza. This is about whatever America is doing, and whomever we support, it's wrong.
Yeah.
Look, I'm a huge advocate for being contrarian to your government. I think that we have to. I think it was constitutionally given to us because that's how you keep a government in check. So
yeah.
I get that part of it. But this isn't that. This isn't keeping our government in check and responsible for the people. This is just hating America.
Yeah.
And there's an irony to a lot of these students are actually foreign students here on student visas. Why are you here if you hate us so much? I'm sorry to be trite. Go home if you don't like it so much. I mean, I don't understand. No one's making you be here. And in the elitist schools, and the schools are handling it wrong. And, you know, I think a rabbi handled it wrong yesterday at one of these schools. I don't think it was the Columbia one. It may have been. There were a few schools who said, Jewish students don't go to school. I don't think that's the answer. I think the answer is go to school, and the school is required to protect you.
Yeah, but you know,
the school should protect you.
One of these schools, the mob was chasing American Jewish students off the campus.
And where is security? Call in police. Protect them. That is their job.
Defund the police. Defund the police. Hey, Alicia, when you were talking, Alicia Preston-Xanthopoulos, Seacoast Online, I had to chuckle because last night when I was working out, before waiting for the Bruins to come on, I watched a half hour of Mark Wahlberg in the movie The Shooter. And there's a great scene because he had been a Marine sniper, and they kind of left him out there, hung him out to dry. And when he's working out in the mountains, and he comes back to his mountain house. He's got his dog, who actually opens the fridge and gets him a beer. It's a great dog trick. And he turns on his laptop for the news, And he's looking at all the world news, and he goes, American National Media, he goes, what lies are they selling us today? That's how he watches it. What lies? But you know what? Last thing I want to say is when you look at some of the videos of the students, you mentioned ignorance protesting yesterday. I'm sorry. I did a little bit of an imitation. You and I are parents, so please forgive me, because you've heard younger people talk like this. And I'm watching these two young gals at Columbia come out to the campus quad or square where the protesters are laying down the sheets. This is a liberated zone. This over here is pro-Palestine, pro-Hamas, anti-Israel. And there's two students come out. There's this like a local reporter, and they're just interviewing them. And you could hear the audio, and they're like, oh, my God, a protest. It's just so fun to be out here. It's so sunny today. I'm going to order a veggie wrap. I don't know what I'm protesting, but you know what? Israel's just a mean, awful country. It's so great to be out here protesting. And that's what they sounded like. They don't even know what they're protesting.
No, they don't. They're just protesting. Do you know why? They're protesting for social media content. They want to make sure their followers know that they're doing something about something, regardless what that something is.
Oh, my God. That name, Hamas, it's just such an unusual name. I'm out here protesting. I don't know what's going on. All right. Thank you.
Have a great day.
Retired General Don Bolduc, he has run for the U.S. Senate. He was nominee the most recent time. Now working in law enforcement, still serving the community. I don't think he can live without serving the community and country. But he's written an op-ed this morning about what he's doing with his campaign funds. And I want to bring on Don Bolduc again. Good morning, New Hampshire, the Pulse of Nature. General, thanks for being with us. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jack. How are you? I have Sharon here with me because she's been every part of this journey from the beginning of my career. As an officer all the way through to retirement and helping out veterans as well. So I wanted to bring her in as part of this, what we decided to do with our excess campaign funds.
Well, talk about it. Take your time. Thank her for her service as well. I know it's a family affair, but you know, this is something you don't hear about every day. So why don't you take away the point of your op-ed piece and what you want to share with our listeners?
Well, the point of the op-ed piece is, you know, we got to, you know, the title says it all, let's make a difference for our veterans. We had, through the generous donations of our supporters, excess campaign funds, and thinking about what we were going to do with those funds, there's a variety of things you can do. We decided to donate the money to veteran organizations that we have been involved with throughout the years and continue to be involved with. One of them being Guardian Angels Medical Service Dogs, which provided me with Victor and continues to provide veterans with service dogs and continue to save lives. That's just one of the five. But for Sharon and I, we want to make a difference for our veterans. We want to continue to do this in New Hampshire and across the country, and we have been. The homeless rate, the unemployment rate, incarceration rate, suicide, it just has not improved. And we want to try and do our best to inspire, embolden our veterans to go get help so that we can continue to give them hope and change and save their lives. And you mentioned it earlier, service is about giving back, and God has blessed us. Mm-hmm. In our journey, he's blessed me with my recovery and post-traumatic stress and TBI, blessed our family, and we want that same blessing for others.
You know, I've said on the show, General Don Bolduc and Sharon, that I appreciate it. Thank you for what you're doing. Thank you. And thank you for your incredible service. It's mind-boggling to me how many deployments, how many years, how many sacrifices. But I don't think we have much business taking care of anyone else if we can't take care of our veterans. And I know some people would disagree with that, but less than 1% serve 330 million people. And a lot of talk about entitlement and who's entitled to what. People even coming here to this country in an undocumented sense, and they're getting benefits and all these things, and we can't take care of our veterans. So thank you. My understanding with campaign funds like this, Don Bolduc, is you ran a federal race. You could have held on to those and use them for a future race. You know, I think you had some flexibility there. So choosing to do this for veterans is a pretty commendable move. You do it every day. Your family's done it, Sharon's done it. But how do we kind of wake up some more people speaking of woke, how do we really wake them up and make them realize maybe the importance sometimes are right here at home? These families that tend to overserve, meaning within one family, many generations of service. How do we wake people up to understand it's a very volatile world? There's two wars going on right now, and we need our men and women who serve, whether it's to, you know, bring in sandbags after a hurricane in the National Guard or an earthquake or defend our country, and freedom is not free. How do we share that word with people who have no idea that freedom is not free?
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's, you know, that's always the question, right? And I think it begins with leadership. And I think in this country at the very top, we have bad leadership tone. We have a failing Veterans Administration, Department of Defense, Labor, transportation, all those entities that are responsible for supporting our veterans are failing at that level because the bureaucracy is too big, the programs are ineffective. It's not that we don't have the programs. You can't swing a dead cat without hitting a veteran program. It's just that they become ineffective. And we're not holding our elected leadership here in this state accountable. The senators and the Congress people are not being held accountable for what they need to be doing. Oh, yeah, they'll put out a newsletter telling you what they're doing, but at the end of the day, the result is a Band-Aid solution. And so it really starts there. And we have to fundamentally change, you know, how they think. Passing a bill for a veteran isn't necessarily the end-all, be-all. You know, the PACT Act was great in concept, but it is now failing to do exactly what it was supposed to do.
Yeah.
And that is unfortunate. It's because the politics get involved on both sides of the aisle, and we just can't seem to come together as a country.
You know, when
and
you
that's
talk...
all our veterans are asking. They serve without prejudice. They serve to make sure you have your freedoms, regardless of sex, race, creed, religion.
Yep, religion.
And that's what we need to make sure people understand, is their sacrifice is worth the support. And you said it, Jack. Less than 1% serve. 99% can certainly come forward and help in that. And those of us that have been blessed with the opportunity to serve our country and still have the means to do it need to get involved. Sharon, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm just going to say, you know, from my standpoint, there are a handful of organizations right out your front door.
Yeah.
So people just need to get active in their community, find out where the needs are. And this is not just for veterans. This is everybody, right?
Yeah.
Every organization can use a helping hand. And, you know, we're so used to just getting stuck by this screen on the computer. We see a lot of things that are happening around us, but nobody's actually walking out into the community saying, you know what, how can I help you?
Great point. And don't let the divisiveness divide us and shut off the noise. And, you know, Sharon and General Bulldog, I just have to say, and you mentioned it starts at the top. I don't want to get in. Everything's Biden and Trump. And you know what? Both have frustrated me at times on the military and the veteran stuff. Don't make it political. But wouldn't it be nice if the president of the United States got up there and gave a speech on how honorable and noble it is to serve in the military, to serve in the National Guard? Young people worried about college tuition. How about going to join the Army? Join the Navy, join the Coast Guard, join the Air Force, join the Marines, law enforcement, public service positions.
Yep.
It's all important. When's the last time we had a leader at the top talk about how commendable it is to serve others and to serve in our military as a noble career? I haven't heard that speech in a long time.
No, I think it was Ronald Reagan that last did that for us. And, you know, it's been, kind of downhill.
Yep.
You hit it. Values and principles, people need to hear what's important. They need to hear it from the top. They need to hear it from our leader. Regardless of political affiliation, we should all be united under our values and principles, because that's what makes this country free, and that's what allows people to do the things that they can do. And it's the military that backs that up time and time again to guarantee that I will sign this dotted line, I will give my life so that you can live your life with liberty and freedom and justice and fairness.
And I don't want to get into the ignorance on some of the college campuses, but these young kids, they don't understand that if you go to another country, you're not free, and it can be taken away from you in a minute. And you know, the last thing I have to say is we got to get politics out of talking about veterans. I had Michael Graham on earlier in New Hampshire Journal, and he was talking about Ray Buckley, the Democrat chair, trying to make a little online quip about Kelly Ayotte's husband, Joe's license plate A-10 for the Warthog he piloted in the Middle East. And she thought, he thought it was something to do with AOT and the year she ran. And it's just, we got to just, you know, got to respect people who serve, give them a little bit of a thank you once in a while. And it's not about entitlement. They earned it, right?
No, you're absolutely right. And what he did was he dishonored the veteran service. He attacked family member number one, which is off limits. But he while Mr. AOT was out flying A-10s in close air support for our infantry and other countries on the ground, protecting us from terrorism and protecting us and protecting our freedoms and ensuring that Mr. Buckley could have those freedoms back here, he takes a swipe like that. That's exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah.
That is just off limits, and he needs to be told that in no uncertain terms, and everybody needs to understand that.
All right, thank you both for what you're doing, donating the unspent campaign funds to veteran groups. Thank you, Sharon. Thank you, General Bulldog. We'll talk to you real soon.
You're welcome. Thank you for having us. And, Jack, thank you for everything you do for veterans. That cannot be overlooked as well.
Thank you, sir.
God bless you.
Give my best to Victor.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Good morning, New Hampshire, powered by Sig Sauer. Now, back to Jack Heath on the Pulse of New Hampshire.
All right, we are back, and I apologize, Aaron Rial. Heard your business report earlier this morning. Thank you for patience during the break, Aaron Rial, NBC News national correspondent. And Aaron, Palestine and Passover. We know what's been going on: the chaos in American campuses, the demonstrations. Which I would say, well, I don't know if they're as much pro-Palestine as they are anti-Israel, but forcing Columbia University to cancel in-person classes the rest of the semester, a bunch of arrests at Yale, some activity down at MIT and Cambridge. Take it away, Aaron.
Yes. So we'll start at Columbia University. Classes were held remotely yesterday, and this is after pro-Palestinian demonstrations on and around the campus left a lot of Jewish students fearing for their safety. Many have said that the demonstrations have veered into anti-Semitism. We actually now see at Yale, in New Haven, police arrested almost 50 protesters. They defied orders to leave an encampment. Same story at NYU. Demonstrations at MIT, Michigan, Tufts, University of Maryland, UNC. The list goes on. And what it's done is it's put administrators in this difficult spot, in the sense that some schools have really tried to defuse these protests. They've called in the police. They've done what they can. But they're also balancing free speech rights and the fears of their Jewish student population.
Mm. Yeah, and I'm not surprised. I think it's a little more of a problem than people think. And, you know, you don't have to comment on this, Aaron, but I've commented on my show not long after October 7th happened, I think the next week. Not surprised about any of this. And it's sad because of history. And when I hear about an American Jewish student literally being chased off of a campus at an Ivy League school in America in 2024, you know, not World War II, it makes me shudder, and it's scary. But at the same time, I think at schools like Columbia, where I've talked a lot about my show in the past, it's really more about an anti-American, anti-Western sentiment as much as it is an anti-Israeli or pro-Palestinian. That's what worries me with a lot of the students and faculty, but you don't need to comment. I'm just pointing out Columbia in particular is a very anti-American university.
And what's interesting here, too, is that a lot of the student organizations within Columbia, they've come out and they've said, actually, one specifically, it is called, I want to make sure I get this right, the Columbia University Apartheid Divest Columbia Students for Justice in Palestine. They said that they have been peaceful and they want to distance themselves from non-student protesters. That's an important part of this. There's many non-student protesters that have gathered here, too, and they are very inflammatory, and that is a problem as well.
Or not to mention, maybe 8 out of 10 students, they're just trying to go to school and learn and are not, you know, don't share any of this. You know, it's always a handful that are the loudest that make the noise. Thank you, Aaron.
Thanks.
Mike Cody, the editor and chief of New Hampshire Magazine and New Hampshire Business Review, joining us with some political, or not political, business talk to take a break from the political, talking about Portsmouth, amateur baseball in Portsmouth. Take it away, Michael.
Yeah, before we do that, I don't even know if you know this yet, but every year New Hampshire Magazine does a readers poll, and the readers of New Hampshire Magazine voted New Hampshire radio talk show Good Morning New Hampshire with Jack Heath as the best New Hampshire radio talk show.
I did not know that, but thank you. It's a team effort. Thank you, Michael. Take it away. That's enough of that. Thank you, Jada.
I can see you're all, if I was in the studio, it'd be like you're all red and embarrassed now, right?
No, I want to hear about amateur baseball in Portsmouth.
Yes. our cover story this month is about baseball. And we've been thinking, working on this for a while. It kind of looks like Sports Illustrated, which is what we were working on. This is an amateur league in Portsmouth. It's the Coastal New England Baseball League. Actually, one of my coworkers here is on the, in the league and told us about it last summer. So we spent some time there. Brian O'Connor is the writer, and Mark Bolton, the great sports photographer. And these are guys who played in high school, played in college. You know, maybe they never play at all, but they don't want to sit on a couch and watch baseball. They want to play. And they have this league where they're very serious about – it's a wooden bat league. But some of the older guys, well, they may, you know, hit a line drive, but they kind of go very slowly on the base because their knees are bad. So sometimes they let them get on base. But when the score gets tight, well, they're not going to cut any corners. They're going to be out. But it's a fun New Hampshire story about – you know, people who rather participate than be spectators.
Yeah, you know, we don't hear enough of that, and that's pretty cool because, you know, there are neat local things to do, and I love hearing that because I lived there. I wasn't even aware of that, so that's why I love your articles and your stories. What else do you have, Mike?
Well, in the same issue, we talked about this briefly last time, but we also have this kind of like a baseball theme in some ways. We've got a feature on the Walter Bat Company based in Nashua. It's an outgrowth of W.H. Bagshaw Company, a century-old, 130-year-old company that manufactures pins and other components for big companies in defense. And they did this wooden bat offshoot a few years ago, and they sell bats to, you know, high school players and college players. They don't do Major League Baseball because the specs are really difficult, but that might be in their sights at some point.
You know, Michael, I was thinking of you. I was talking about this one. And I think it might be at Pease. I'll get the info. I was reading locally. I'd not been aware, but there's a woman who started this. I don't know. I don't have it in front of me, Michael, but I'll send you an email if you're interested or one of your writers. She started a lot of the New Hampshire fishing industry is a lot of like carpentry and remodeling and builders. There's a lot of older fishermen and women, you know, people, they're getting older. And they're trying to get more people to get into the trade and work of basically fishing, professional fishing, you know, catching.
Sure.
You know, and so she's starting a school, I think, or a program out there. And I just think there are things like that we don't hear about. And you have some other stuff this morning.
Yeah, actually, what you just told me about, that sounds like a fun story. One of the things we're playing up is the Big Taco Tour comes to Manchester in early May. I think it's May 2nd on Thursday. And you know, that's a great Queen City event. Gets people out there, and the street gets closed off. We get, you know, tourists, and it just brings people downtown. And if you've been downtown Manchester lately, you're noticing there are a lot more people who live there. That's actually something we're working on for our next issue, just talking to people who live in these high-rises, right? They live in the old Citizens Bank building, or they live in the Bray Sullivan Plaza, and some of these new apartments that Red Oak and other folks have built. A lot more people downtown, which I think is a very positive thing.
Yeah, I appreciate it. You know, Mike, I wanted to mention, because we had some people ask, because they had read and knew you were with the New Hampshire Union Leader for many years, and they were not aware. And we got some messages last week, so I've told them, I forwarded them your main sites and all that. But I think it's not a waste of time to just once again talk about what you're overseeing. If people have story ideas, business ideas, feature ideas, where you are, and kind of what the publications and the media outlets are.
Sure. Yeah, so New Hampshire Magazine comes out 10 times a year. We're monthly, except in the winter months, January, February, March, April, we're bi-monthly. And, you know, we're a feature publication that writes about people and places and things in New Hampshire. New Hampshire Business Review comes out twice a month, 24 times a year, and we focus on business news of New Hampshire. So we're looking for good trend stories. What are the business stories that people aren't seeing? You know, you hear about, you know, a lot of deals, merger and acquisition deals at the smaller level. That's the kind of stuff you see bubbling up, right? Where's that? Where's the activity? Are banks lending? Who's getting the money? Those types of things. We're interested in stories that maybe aren't getting told elsewhere. And it's fun because I get to talk with a lot of the same people that I did in my last job, just in a different place. We're in the Wombeck Mill building downtown.
And if people want to email, or best way to contact you?
It's Mike Cody at YankeePub.com, and we're owned by Yankee Publishing.
And J-Dog, that's not a pub like you get a ginger beer. That's for publishing. And it's Cody, C-O-T-E. All right, Michael, thank you, and thanks for the news on the show. We appreciate it. Good readers.
Thanks a lot, Jack.
Thank you.
Take
a break.
Bye-bye.
Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent, and he's talking. Don't tell me there's a hush money trial of Donald Trump in New York. No, I'm kidding. I don't know if you knew that, Rory. It's on CNN. It's nonstop. Every minute. Nonstop.
Right?
Nonstop.
There's
with
nothing
everybody.
Else going on.
I don't know. I mean, with like 25 people covering it, that's the remarkable thing. But, you know, there's also the contrast. You've got Donald Trump in court again, Joe Biden going to Florida. I mean, that's a state we didn't think would be in play, but he's trying to play up the abortion issue since a new 6-week ban takes effect in Florida on May 1st.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Yeah, it's all going to be abortion. What else you have, Rory?
Also taking a look at the Supreme Court decision to take up the ghost gun case at their term starting in October. These are the guns that don't have serial numbers and sometimes can be printed on a 3D printer in your own house. The lower courts have ruled that the Biden administration did not have the authority to ban these kinds of ghost guns or to require a background check or a serial number for them. Essentially, the argument is they're just parts. They're not selling firearms. They're just selling parts, and they have to be treated as such.
Well, there you have it. All right, Rory, thank you very much. Rory O'Neill, CBS Radio National Correspondent. Martha Zoller is a force of her own, not only in Georgia, but on the broadcasting conservative political commentator side. And also, but, you know, she's a Georgia person, but don't hold that against her. But she's a pundit, former candidate, and joins us again on the show. Martha, thanks for being back with us. Good morning, Hampshire, the Pulse of an H.
Hey, Jack, how are you?
We're doing okay, and of course, we're now going a little more national in our pickup and up into Maine. But, Martha, I said to John Decker, on White House correspondent earlier, this is the setup you don't need. I maybe it's my contrary and commonsensical thinking, but I get it going this morning. I'm looking at the world. The Senate's returning to vote on this big foreign aid funding package and support for Israel, ironically. Don't tell the college students that. Ukraine and Taiwan. You got Columbia University basically shut down, not by pro-Palestinian mob, you know, agitators they call them, but anti-Israel, anti-Semitic. You got inflation biting into most families. You still got the situation in the Ukraine. You got an out-of-control southern border. And all CNN has done for 2 hours is cover the Donald Trump hush money trial. It's nonstop, like the Summer Olympics on CNN. Like nothing else is happening but Donald Trump's trial and the gag order and hush money. I'll let you take it from there.
Yeah, he makes money for him, doesn't he? I mean, people don't watch CNN unless they're bashing Trump, which is ridiculous because the purpose of a news organization is to tell you what's important in the world. And, you know, even though probably these overall numbers of protesters, if you really looked at it in the whole scheme of things, aren't very big, they're very noisy and they're anti-Semitic. And, you know, just assume that it was like Alabama 1960, and it was white students keeping black students from getting into a student building. That was, the National Guard was called in for that, okay? If today you've got students that are blocking Jewish students from going where they want to go on campus at elite universities, and I say to parents, if you've got a kid in that university, take them out. If you've got a child that's considering going to that university, you don't apply. The only thing they're going to listen to is money. And what makes me very sad is that most of these very weak university presidents are women. And I have been a woman that has had to fight the glass ceiling my entire career. And to see a bunch of women who should have made it be so weak bothers me.
You know what it is. They got, in this culture of ours, like the Harvard president, when I watch her testify, the former, you get all these lawyers telling her what she can and can't say and almost handcuffing her when she, you know, is it okay to basically threaten the life of a Jewish student? Does that violate your code? I'm not sure. I have to think about. What do you have to think about? I mean, everything is just so politically incorrect under the auspices of being politically correct. It's crazy.
No student should be in fear of going to class. I don't care who you are or what you look like, okay? When you are protesting outside, and it's really interesting because the Supreme Court is hearing a case related to these homeless encampments in Oregon today. And depending on how they rule on that, and it won't be until June, you know, they're calling these protest encampments. You know, they're using the same terminology, and I think they need to be careful because they're going to end up, as they should be, having the NYPD come in there and clear them out like they did on Friday. But they need to keep them out because it's wrong. That is not peaceful protest. That is anti-Semitic behavior, and we have to stand against it. And you know what, Jack? This has been the easiest position I have ever taken in my life.
Yeah.
I mean, it is so clearly right and wrong versus left and life, right, that you can't even, you should have no problem making this decision.
I know. Martha Zoller, and she'll tell us where you can get her stuff, but out of Georgia, where she's based, but beyond that. Martha, I've been on Columbia University's, they've been on my radar for a while, maybe 20 years. And I tell you what scares me, and I just posted this on my show page. It's not so much, it doesn't surprise me that ignorant college students who don't understand the history of World War II, don't understand the history of the Middle East, don't understand geography in the Middle East, and don't understand what the number one covenant of Hamas is, or any of the proxies or Tehran. But what scares me is not anti-Israeli sentiment as much as anti-American sentiment. Columbia University has been, in my opinion, an anti-American university for probably two decades, maybe longer. And when I say anti-American, everything about our country, we stink, we suck, we're the problem, all police are bad, our military's bad, our economy's bad, your parents' house is bad, your carbon, everything about America is bad. And you wonder why young people aren't believing more in this country.
Yeah, I mean, and Columbia is a big problem. And it's you don't blame as much the 18 to 21-year-olds whose minds are mush and their parents haven't taught them any history. You do blame the professors that are being arrested with them. Those are people that are supposed to be PhDs and be knowledgeable about the world. And they are teaching a one-sided view of the world that is dangerous. What should happen in colleges and in high schools, for that matter, is you teach young people to critically think. You teach them how to figure out. My father wasn't a very well-educated guy because he had to leave school to help with the family business back in the day, and then he went off to war and did a little bit of college at NYU, for that matter, when he got back. But he used to say that you're going to forget most of what you learn at school, but what you should remember is how to think and how to critique things.
What
you should be learning in school.
Yeah, what a great line. It's a great line. Hey, Martha, real quickly, what's your take? I'm not going to throw stones on this, but this ongoing story, Bill Maher over the week, talking about NPR and, 87 senior editors, all Democrats, not a surprise. No surprise that NPR is a liberal-leaning news organization, but they're not a talk show. They're a news organization. But what's your thoughts on, is this a problem now for NPR with Yuri Berlin or, kind of blowing the whistle or not?
Yeah, it is a problem, and I think they've suspended him, right? I mean, so you can't call attention to what's going on without repercussions, but they think there should be no repercussions against them. Well, I'm sorry, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, and I think that we ought to unfund NPR. Why do we have national public radio? We're not the UK. We're not somewhere else where all we have. And if you see, they have the same problem with the BBC, where they can't call a terrorist a terrorist. They're afraid to offend somebody. So I don't know that government-owned media is the way to go. I think choices in media is the way to go. And this person, this woman that's the head of NPR, another woman leading an organization and doing a poor job, and that hurts me. Okay, Jack? It hurts me because I know for a fact every time a woman does a poor job, it makes it harder for the rest of us.
Real quickly, I don't think these trials of Donald Trump, as rating-oriented as they can be and sensational, have any impact this fall, politically speaking. Am I right or wrong?
I think you're right about that. I'm surprised by it initially, but now I understand why, because it's piling on. The average person and liberal lawyers that I've talked to all say it's piling on, that there's no basis, especially for the New York cases. It's just a bunch of lawfare is the term that they coined for it. And I've heard that from all kinds of lawyers. I don't think it hurts him at all. I think it helps him in a strange way. But I think what he ought to do is kind of what he's doing. He should go wherever he wants to go on the weekends, and he ought to have big events in New York in the evenings in the New York tri-state area and keep going.
Finally, I'm going to let you go, Martha Zoller. You can tell us how to find your stuff and your works. I just have to say, one of the stories that caught my attention this morning was Robert F. Kennedy Jr., getting on more ballots, nothing to see here, ignored by the national media, running as an independent. But he's on to something, and no one's talking about this. We have $34, $35 trillion in debt, and he's talking about making the federal budget transparent, even using, like, digital technology, so taxpayers can see how their money is being wasted or spent. I got to tell you, it hits a chord with a lot of people.
It hits a chord, and I do think we need to do some kind of zero-based budgeting, maybe one department a year, so that every 15 years, you know, you've looked at all the departments. I know the defense say they're too big to audit, but they're not, the Defense Department. There is overlap in every department. We ought to be transparent. He's hitting on a chord. He'll get 20% of the vote, but you know what? With the lackluster view people are having about going to the polls in November, he might get more.
Whoa. If he even gets near 20, that's a profound impact on this election.
Yeah. I mean, Ross Perot got 19% in 92.
Yeah.
I think he could fall in that neighborhood. I really do.
Well, I got to tell you that look at Joe Biden ignored New Hampshire for 2 years after saying our primary didn't matter, New Hampshire didn't matter. He ran back here after the State of the Union real quick. We have 4 electoral college votes. And the next week, Jill Biden came here. They weren't coming here to buy a condo in Franconia Notch. If New Hampshire's in play, and it should be in the bag for Biden, if they're that worried about states like New Hampshire and Kennedy's on the ballot here, I got to tell you, it could impact the results.
It could impact the results, and I think there are going to be some surprising states that are in play that people think are safe states. And I think that Georgia, though, is going to show that they're red in November. I think that they will go heavily for Trump in November.
Okay, so I'm humbled and happy and pleased. I mean, I appreciate my show. You got to be on more national. You got to take the Martha Zoller show on the. You got to be number one in the country. You should be out there. When are you getting the national
Thank
show?
You.
When are you getting the national?
Thank you. Well, I don't know about that, but you can listen to me. And I have a Substack at Martha Zoller. You can follow me on Twitter at Martha Zoller, MarthaZoller.com. You can listen live to me there. And thank you very much. I appreciate that.
From your mouth to God's ears. We're going to forward the audio to the Newsmax chief. Thank you very much, Martha. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.